This is a podcast from The Times.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle 115, sub-episode 1.1 for the week beginning Monday, May the 24th, 2010. I'm in Italy.
How's your holiday going, Andy?
It's been unbelievable, John.
That's great. You would not believe. Give me some specifics as to what has happened, Andy.
I mean, I've just been out clubbing and pulling.
Oh, God. Okay, take all of those specifics away. Well, I hope you're enjoying your holiday, Andy, a week from now.
Yep. I can imagine I'll be absolutely loving it.
I can't see why you wouldn't be, Andy. You know, yep. Italy's a great place.
Just be stuffing my face full of bits of animal.
Yeah. No one's denying that.
Out of animals' boobs.
No need to put it like that.
However, I know most people say cheese, but, you know, on holiday, you just relax a little, your little language talk.
Some of the best meals I ever had, I guess this is unsurprising, were in Italy, Andy. I used to work there at an opera festival, the Musica nel Chiostro in Bassignano. And I remember we were driving back from doing something with the sets one point. I was driving back with the chef. We were picking up some food on the way, and we hit a wild boar on the way up the mountain where we were staying. And chef got out, and he said, "I'm going to f***ing cook that boar." And he did. That boar did not die in vain as it smashed against the front of our van. It made a very delicious meat and a pasta. Yep. So good for that boar, Andy. Nicely tenderised as well by having a van slam into its side.
That's the best way to do it, John. Because that's what you want. What you really, to get the most flavour out of your old wild boar, your cingale, I believe. Yep. That's the only Italian that I know is food. Is that it should be relaxed and ideally thinking that it's just crossing a road.
Yes.
And that gets you the maximum tastiness out of it. If it knows, I mean, if you line it up and stand over it with a gun saying, look at me, this one's for Joanne, look at me, then it's not going to be quite as yummy.
The best boar to eat is organic in the best sense, roam free and then ploughed down by a van.
We ran over a monkey in South Africa once.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Did you eat it?
Not entirely, no.
I can't joke about that. That seems horrible. I know, I realise that's rapidly inconsistent, but I don't find that funny, Andy.
Yeah.
How old were you? You must have been horrified.
I was about 13, 14. But it just ran out in front of us. Splat.
Oh.
Got him.
Poor little monkey.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty more in the sea.
Well, not in the sea, Andy, no. That's half a good
No, we
point.
Didn't. I do think you probably do have a moral duty to eat animals that you've run over. Otherwise it's meaningless, isn't it? I mean, you're damaging the environment enough as it is.
I remember I did a field piece of The Daily Show. A guy was living off the grid, and he ate roadkill in Carolina, and I ate some roadkill bear.
Right. How was that?
And some roadkill deer. It was mentally hard to forget where it had come from.
Cooked,
Andy.
Or carpaccio?
Cooked. Right. It was cooked, but it was a mental
How did
leap.
You find the antlers? Were they a bit crunchy, or...?
Actually, I didn't mind the antlers, Andy. Right. Didn't mind them.
Yep.
No, it gives it a nice bit of a
You want a strong mayonnaise,
side.
Or a kind of mustardy mayonnaise with an antler?
I tell you what we've done, Andy. We've misinterpreted Chris's instructions just to do a brief introduction about what this is.
That's right.
And then
keep going.
Well, I'm on holiday, John. I'm not focused. I'm not working.
That's why.
I'm not working. Yeah. Just my wife and kids are outside the studio saying, come back to the swimming pool, Daddy.
Enjoy whatever is coming up.
Yeah, some bits that Chris has saved specially for your delectation.
Thank you, Chris.
Sub-episode while I am off. Sunning myself and chatting up the Italian belladonnas.
Ciao bella.
Ciao bella. I'm going to have to get a moped. And I've got my hair slicked back.
Good. Yeah. It's quite an image.
Yeah.
Enjoy the Bugle. Whatever it is.
Just some breaking news now. Gordon Brown has offered a 25-round bare-knuckle fight against David Cameron to settle the disputed election, citing the president when the Tory Earl of Derby and the Whig Lord John Russell had a proper tear-up outside the House of Commons lawn to decide the 1852 election. So we could be heading to that. There's some possible compromises, including Gordon Brown staying on, but with an entirely Conservative cabinet, whilst David Cameron leads up the Labour opposition. That could get interesting. Very nearly happened in the 2000 US election, in fact. They were going to have the Supreme Court very nearly ruled that Al Gore would be president, but constitutionally forced to implement the policies of George W. Bush, which would have been interesting. I mean, and it raises the question, would it have been more palatable, those policies, if they'd been coming out of a less irritating face, or would Gore's face have become more irritating due to the policies? This is a classic chicken and egg situation. Or, rather than rerunning the entire election in 6 months, as could well happen with a minority government, each party will nominate 40 MPs in marginal constituencies to ritually commit suicide to force enough by-elections to sort it all out. So, it's all up in the air, John. It's all up in the air. And the uncertainty has led to the pound falling.
What?
Yeah,
no!
I'm going on a holiday in a couple of weeks, and if I'd known that was going to happen, I would never have voted for a hung parliament. Never. Bugle feature section now, and
Andy!
Sleep section! Did that come across? Did it come across?
I think I've just worked out what I want your alarm to be every morning now, and it's just my voice. Andy!
that's how I wake
Andy!
Up. Just flashbacks. Flashbacks
days.
To that gig in York. I think that's,
happy days.
That's how you dragged me off the stage. I wanted to keep out there fighting. You pulled me back.
I could have been a contender.
Medic! So, obviously, I don't get enough sleep. And some scientists in Britain and Italy have warned that if you get less than 6 hours sleep a night, that can lead to you dying unnecessarily early.
Uh-oh, that is some very bad news for me, Andy.
Bad news for both of us, John.
Yes.
For the long-term future of the Bugle, that is looking bad.
Oh, dear. I think I need to make some very fast phone calls. Yeah.
It can also, on my personal research, using me as a sample, can lead to an overactive bullshit gland as well. So you lose touch with reality. What I'm concerned about here, British and Italian researchers.
What?
John, so if, with the Italians, this 6 hours in addition to the 3 hours kip after lunch that you take every day. And also, it does call into question Mr. John Bon Jovi's claim that he will live when he's alive and sleep when he's dead. I mean, it carries a lot less weight when part A accelerates the onset of part B. Very dangerous public health message from Jovi, characteristically irresponsible. Not for the first time. Bad medicine might be what he needs. But there's nothing actually wrong with him. He's a young man in good health. It's different for the sick and the infirm. Well, lack of sleep poses a potential death risk, and famously, Mrs. Thatcher used to have 20 minutes sleep a year, roughly, basically being kept alive by a mixture of her own powerful sense of revulsion with herself.
Yes.
Injections of Cecil Parkinson's blood directly into her buttocks.
Sleeping like a bat, from hanging upside down from the ankles.
That's right, and tiger sperm milkshakes. It's all in Hansard.
Oh, okay, I fold from that little riff.
I'm not saying she extracted it herself, John.
I'm out.
You know,
doesn't matter.
You can buy it from a respectable dealer. But it's... and, of course, you know, she is... and she's been dead on the inside since 1979.
That's true.
So, but no wonder our leaders make so many bloopers, John. Our politicians don't sleep enough. It's a tough job. And basically, it's like having a team of junior doctors running the country to say, oh, I've been on shift for 72 hours without a break. I just need... Oh, shit, I've cut the wrong bit off the economy. I once fell asleep in a school class, John.
Did you?
Yeah. The problem was, it was a Greek class, and I was the only pupil studying Greek.
Uh-oh.
So it was me and the teacher, and there I was asleep. And it's hard, you know, in a class of 20 or more, you could probably get away with it.
Uh-huh.
In a class of one, it's tricky.
How did that end, that little event?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I woke up and the teacher had this look in his eye to think, am I really that boring? But, of course, there's a number of inappropriate places or occasions to fall asleep. The Wimbledon final. That'll be a bad place. So here's Nadal. Match point down. History in the making for Andy Murray here as the Spaniard serves and Murray curls up in a ball, sucking his thumb and cuddling his telly. Well, this could cost him the next set and a half unless his alarm clock goes off. Or your own wedding. That'll be bad. Do you take this woman to be your lawful wedded wife, for better and or worse, to A, have, B, hold, and C, not hold too tightly, till death and or financial expediency do you part? What's going on? Did you put the toaster in the bath? Where am I? Who are you? Why are you wearing that hat? Also, a bad place to fall asleep would have been the first joint press conference as a Prime Minister this week. Nick and I both fervently believe in a new politics. Changey. Can you pick this up, big dog? I'm whacked. Give us a nudge if the questions get too arsey. Do you have a set method for trying to get to sleep, John, when you were a... You can't.
I've tried many things, Andy. I've sometimes have the radio on. I used to have the radio on to play the news all night, but that contributes to very strange, albeit topical dreams.
counting sheep, of course. That's the old classic. Either jumping over a fence or trying to jump over a fence but falling over. Very, very funny. Jumping into an abattoir and taking a bolt gun to the head. That I find quite relaxing. Or counting sheep as they march through Red Square in army uniform, bleating at Stalin. That's another way of doing it. You've got to keep changing it up, John. Keep it fresh. Other news now, and controversy has raged at the alternative children's entertainer's ultimate brawling caged frackathon at the Belinda Carlisle Memorial Arena in Bognor Regis, England. Ferret Swallow, the human trouser leg, was disqualified after one of his animals turned out to have been doped with rat attacks, an over-the-counter rodent aggressionizer containing the banned steroid vermino belligerambutamol, leading to it attempting to bite the ear off Mr. Rotator the Giant Potato, the rotisserie spud impersonator, who had himself been disciplined for burning the human trouser leg with a pre-microwave potato. This left the way clear for defending champion Scrafe on Welshin, real name the Bug Juggler Jug Smuggler, the smuggler who can miraculously keep 9 large poisonous insects airborne while sneaking priceless antique vases through customs, progresses to the final, although his scorpion did ricochet off a millipede as he tried ambitiously to pass off an ancient Greek red figure Lekithos as a bottle of novelty aftershave, while smacking his opponent's balloon specialist, the human Hindenburg, round the head with an 18th century Ming containing poisonous blister beetles. That's all. I'm done. I'm done. I need that. I need my bullshit, John. It's the only thing keeping me alive.
So this is the final straight now. 6 days.
Yep.
Until Britain's election. This time next week, the next bugle, Britain will have a different government. Or the same, but probably not. And of course, Britain is not just a three-party nation, Andy. That's important to state. Its democratic umbrella also covers a number of other parties too, both whack job related and otherwise. So just give you a little taste of the other options on the democratic buffet in England next week. There's the Cure Party, which stands for Citizens for Undead Rights and Equality Party, which has the campaign message, zombies like students are people too, let's fight for their rights to politically party. I'm guessing by mentioning students, it's clear who these people are.
Also, well, to be fair, traditionally the Conservatives do look after the dead pretty well.
Their manifesto includes give the undead equal rights to the living, make cemeteries more comfortable for their inhabitants, implement a robust social integration programme for the undead, curing society of its prejudices, increase the minimum statutory requirement age to beyond death, permit marriages of the living and the undead. Which is all very well, Andy, but how are they going to pay for any of that?
It's not costed. Let's see the sums!
Where's it coming from? Are they going to tax the undead too? I know we're supposed to be neutral here on the Bugle. I really don't think they're ready for office. I honestly don't. They're fiscally, deeply irresponsible. They have no clear long-term strategy to sustain a retirement plan for the undead.
You have to think as well, the dead surely already very adequately represented with the House of Lords.
Boom! Yay! Solid, Andy. Rock solid.
We're slightly outdated now that I don't really have hereditary peers anymore. Yeah, but still,
listen, 15 years ago that would have been a wonderful joke.
Absolute killer.
another party is the Church of the. This is true, by the way. The Church of the Militant Elvis and Bus Pass Elvis Party. Their pledges revolve mainly around potholes and moats. One of the pledges, fancy a moat around your house to keep out randy footballers, I guess. Bono for Pope. Turn public schools into pound shops and fill in the potholes, which is a surprisingly rational one at the end there. Not fill the potholes in with fairy dust or with peanut butter, just fill them in because they play havoc with car axles. And finally, of course, the classic fringe party in Britain is called the Monster Raving Loony Party. They've been around for many, many elections. This year, they're going with all socks to be sold in packs of three as a precaution against losing one. Make it illegal for superheroes to use their powers for evil. Good luck policing that. Ban all terrorists from having beards as they look scary. I'm not sure focusing on appearance is addressing the root of that problem, but I'm willing to be proven wrong. Change the English symbol of three lions to three badgers. I'm not actually entirely against that one. I think it might be worth a trial period. School dinners must be regularly checked for radioactivity. Hold on, is that not happening already? And finally, dedicated pogo stick lanes on routes to centres of work. That's just flat-out common sense right there, Andy. Especially if it reduces our reliance on foreign oil.
That's right. Yeah, but if we then become dependent on foreign pogos instead.
Oh, God, you know, that's a good point.
Because the pogo tree, you know, it doesn't grow in very many places.
That's a good
point. So you're just shifting the problem.
Yeah. If you want Bahrain produces quality, most of the world's springs.
That's right. If you want a proper pogo stick from a genuine pogo tree, you've got to pay top dollar. And we all know where that dollar's going. It's going into the pockets of the pogo tree companies. And then it all ends up being spent on weapons, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. So naive, these people.
Pogo industrial complex, Andy.
But it's interesting because, you know, this kind of thing doesn't really exist in America, does it? These kind of absolute lunatic fringe political groups.
No, it's not.
I guess they've got the Republicans
celebrated.
There, so, you know, that's already covered.
Got him again, Andy!
Smack! Oh, it's out of here!
You can't
out into the streets of London! That's not coming back!
See ya!
In further religion-stroke-offence news, a Muslim group in Britain has demanded an apology from the army after it turned out that replica mosques had been installed on a firing range in Yorkshire. Now, you would have thought someone might have raised this issue at some point in the construction process, when maybe the person in charge said, right, we need to spruce up the firing range, Panksbury, go and build some replica mosques. Mosques, boss? Yes, mosques. Isn't that a little bit sensitive? No, I'm sure it's fine. They're only mosques. I guess in their defence, by having them on a range, you can show how important it is not to fire at the mosques. And that's the only way. By practising with mosques, you can learn not to fire at them. And that is the key in these sensitive conflicts that we're involved in. I guess they could have had not just mosques. I guess, would it have been all right if they'd had mosques as well as synagogues, churches and igloos? Cricket now, John, and, well, England are the greatest nation in the world again. We're in the
that's
final
good.
Of the World 2020 in the West Indies.
Your favourite kind of cricket, aren't they?
That's, not entirely. I mean, it's only just cricket.
Yeah.
It only takes about 8% of the time a real cricket match takes.
Right.
Just 20 overs a team, that's about... It's about the length of a baseball game. It's a bit too jaunty, but let's not quibble. We're in the final against Australia, against Pakistan. Delete as applicable after Friday's second semi-final, which is about to start as we record. The first time we've been in the final of a World Limited Overs competition since 1992. It looks like we can only play good Limited Overs cricket when there's a Tory in number 10. Sacrifice worth making? Well, I don't know. So can we beat Australia? Can we beat Pakistan? At least it's applicable. On Sunday to take the first ever major limited overs trophy in England's history, if you don't count the Battle of Agincourt in 1415, which wasn't entirely a cricket match, but which we did win, so it half counts. Well, of course, England don't have a great record against Australia. Well, of course, England don't have a great record against Pakistan. At least it's applicable. Well, of course, against Australia, they will have to be at their best. And of course, against Pakistan, they might have to be at their best, but equally might well get away with just doing okay and turning up if Pakistan implode, as they so spectacularly do so often. You've got to love Pakistani cricket, John. It is genuinely the most unpredictable sporting team in the world. Natural disasters and women's honkers news now. And it was Boobquake Day this week, John.
Right,
this is in response to the an Islamic cleric blaming earthquakes on women who dress immodestly. So American blogger Jen McCrate launched Boobquake in reaction to this and encouraged her friends to dress in their boobiest clothes and quake their boobs, I guess, to see whether this would provoke an earthquake. And it did. this is the amazing thing. So maybe the cleric was right. There was an earthquake of 6 on the Richter scale in Taiwan. And Miss McCrate claimed that the single earthquake wasn't significant. Earthquakes of this magnitude happen on average over 130 times a year, she claimed. And that means we had a 37% probability of an earthquake of that magnitude happening on Boobquake Day, just due to chance alone. But it's still a 63% chance of it not happening. And if 6 magnitude quakes happen 130 times a year, doesn't that merely prove that women are dressing 130 times too hotly? These harlots and harridans have been causing natural disasters for centuries, John. Here's the thing. Before women were invented, John, there were no earthquakes at all. None.
That we know of.
Yeah. Reminiscent, of course, of the famous Nadja quake of 1871, when British Prime Minister William Gladstone, US President Ulysses S. Grant and French Emperor Napoleon III lined up on the Franco-Prussian border and jiggled their balls towards Berlin in an effort to curb Prussian militarism. The former French Prime Minister Dominique de Villepin has been commissioned to write the Harry Potter prequel. Also coming out, Joseph Stalin's History of Needlecrafts, written in 1948-49, to be published and updated to include some designs that don't involve the graphic depiction of the mass killing of political opponents. And also coming out soon, Tommy the Tadpole and Freddy the Frog Go to the Magic Lily Pad by children's author Rutger Basingstoke. A really a radical revisionist view of the Lyndon Johnson presidency. And this email comes from Ian Everhart in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who writes, "Dear John and Andy, in descending rank order of likelihood to not emigrate, I was browsing the website of Westminster Abbey, as one does, and came upon this, a service to celebrate the life of Florence Nightingale in the centennial year of her death. It's Wednesday, May the 12th, 2010, at 6:15 p.m. Westminster... Sorry, focus. This sounds like it would be a terrible event to attend, or a tremendously great one. It's hard to know until it actually happens. Even if John and Andy and Chris can't make it, I say that all Bugle listeners in Britain should converge for an impromptu Hotties from History celebration." Well, I would love to see that. Would love to see all 50 million British buglers, at a guess. I haven't seen the latest figures, but I assume it's that. Converging on Westminster Abbey.
I'm up for it.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go.
With their Florence Nightingale smocks on. Oh, yeah. I can't believe I've not been asked to talk at that. You'd have thought.
Yeah.
You thought I'd be pretty much the first person they'd come to.
Keynote speaker, mate.
That's right. I guess maybe, I don't know, in a church. If it was in a secular... No. I guess the after party's in Spearmint Rhino.
Well, that's it. Andy, you can get back to your holiday now.
Great.
Get back on the moped, popping some wheelies.
That's it, yep.
And making sexually aggressive gestures towards young Italian girls. It's the Italian way.
Yep. That's when in Rome, or when a few hundred miles from Rome.
Are you going to try at some point to kick Berlusconi in the balls?
Well, I think there's quite a queue for that at the moment.
Are you carrying around a miniature cathedral just in case you see him?
Yeah, I've brought, obviously, I don't want to tread on the Italians' territory. I've brought a St. Paul's Cathedral.
Oh, that's very nice, Andy.
On behalf of Britain, I'd like to throw a British cathedral at him.
A little bit English flavour.
That's right. And I've got a little replica synagogue as well. So,
good for you, Andy.
The Jewish community.
Good for you. And in fact, in many ways, they have even more reason to be angry with Silvio Berlusconi. Have a lovely week.
Thanks.
We'll be back next week. Yeah. I was actually mainly talking to the buglers there, Andy. I don't see why you shouldn't be involved in that too.
No. I'm having a great week here in sunny Italy.
Good.
But assuming that I've got there and the volcano hasn't blown up again, or the British Airways strike hasn't left me swearing my nut off in Gatwick Airport.
I'm hoping that I've got close to finishing the Daily Show book, Andy, because if not, when we next speak, it's going to be very tense. Yeah. Our deadline is the end of May.
Really?
Yes.
That's ages away. I wrote my book in 3 weeks.
Okay, well, I wouldn't use that as a sales technique, Andy, to people, prospective buyers. I wrote it in 3 weeks. I wrote it faster than you can read it.
Well, the Bible, that was a week, wasn't it?
I'm not sure.
And it reads like that's it. That's entirely
true. Well, you just took away all the all the God points you got by throwing St. Paul's Cathedral at Berlusconi. It's just another thing in the long Judgment Day file. That's going to be dumped down on the table when you cork it.
So that's it, Buglers. We'll be back with a proper Bugle next week. In the meantime, do email us, thebugle@timesonline.co.uk, and follow the Bugle Twitter feed, which I will not be updating from Italy, or my wife will divorce me.
Yes, I think that's fair enough.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
For the best in sport, comedy, science and books, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.